Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. I'm Robert A. Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom Radio, and tonight my guest is Montgomery Granger. He's the author of Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay. He was one of the first officers at Guantanamo when Guantanamo opened, and he also was at a prison in Iraq. I can never get the name. Abu Garud. I can never get that name right. But anyway, and he's been in the front line. First ones over there when the Iraq war started. And so without any further ado, I'm going to bring on Montgomery Granger, and we're going to talk about not only Gitmo, but we're going to talk about the budget cuts tonight, if Montgomery, to the veterans, and how I feel, my personally, that's very disingenuous to people who served for the country. And without any further ado, I want to bring Montgomery on. Welcome to the show, Montgomery.
Thank you, Rob. It's always a pleasure. I'm very grateful to you and your listeners for giving me this time to talk about what's going on.
And I know we've talked about Gitmo and the Saving Grace, your book, Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay. But right now, I was reading when they do the budget cuts next year, they're also going to cut veterans benefits. Where is that one of the most disingenuous things you ever heard?
Yes, it is. And I think it's going to be the last straw for many of us veterans. I think the most egregious part about what the Senate just passed and probably President Obama signed today was that it's going to affect the disabled retirees and survivors, that their payments are going to be reduced as well. And overall, $6 billion is going to be taken from all retirees over the next 10 years, according to what the legislators just signed. And it is a betrayal, to say the very least, of the oath that in the promise that we were given, that goes back way before you and I were around, but even Abraham Lincoln in his second inaugural address, in his malice toward none speech, said that to care for him who shall have borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan, that these were promises made to military from all branches, from the very first fight, that we're not asking to become rich by laying our life on the line, but there was a promise made. And my concern now, Rob, is what about all those young fellas and young ladies watching what's happening now, watching the lack of loyalty to our folks in Benghazi, watching little by little the benefits reduced, and not just for active duty, also for reservists like me. It's a constant pecking away at the promises made to all of us.
How is that really the most weakening thing? Because people no longer see a reason to serve because, let's be honest, when you go to war, somebody's going to get hurt. But here's the thing. If they ain't willing to take care of them, that shows the other countries were weak, doesn't it?
It says a lot of things, and that's certainly one of them. To say to somebody that lost a limb or their eyesight or to a widow or to an orphan that we're not going to make good on our promise, we're going to take 20% from you over the next 10 years, that's egregious. It strikes at the very heart of the Army values that we are trained to uphold. Loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. Those are the things that we promise. We also promise to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And it looks like the legislators who voted today or yesterday to reduce the benefits want to be our enemy. They're severely damaging the relationship between the military personnel and the civilian leadership that we have in this country.
But how are they putting the civilians like me and you? I mean, you're a reservist, but you're still civilian, you know. How are they putting us at risk for an invasion?
Well, they're weakening the force, and they've been doing that since this president got in. He's been pulling out of places that we should have stayed. He's given away the high ground in the global war on terror by leaving Iraq, and looks like he might want to leave Afghanistan. But if you look it up, we have troops in over 150 countries today, and they're all there for one reason, and that is project our power and influence to defeat our enemy. And the blood and treasure that was spent to help Iraq back on its feet is being wasted as we speak because Al-Qaeda and Iranians have moved right in. It was like a vacuum, a leadership vacuum that sucked them right into Iraq. And look what's happened all across the Middle East. It's gotten so bad that there are no good choices anymore to support in some of these countries. That the people that we've spent our lives trying to defeat are now people that this administration is contemplating giving aid to. And if you read your Constitution, giving aid and comfort to the enemy is the definition of treason.
You know, a lot of things our elected officials have done has been on the borderline of that, if you ask me. You know, but your book, Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, a memoir of a citizen warrior, they can go to Amazon, Kindle, Barnes & Noble, Nook version. How would somebody's insight open up to the real goings-on in, like Guantanamo Bay and that prison in Iraq?
I think the most important thing, Rob, is for folks to understand that these military detention facilities that the United States Army runs are the finest detention facilities in the world. And I know that because I've worked with International Committee of the Red Cross. I describe it in my book. These are the folks who come in and give you suggestions about how you can improve it. And time again, they told me personally that nobody does detention operations better than the United States of America. And the problem is your mainstream media and your liberals and your Islamist apologists want you to believe that Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib and all the other places where we've kept military detainees are gulags, that they're illegal, that we torture people, and that could not be further from the truth. When we went into Guantanamo Bay, we were told specifically that these unlawful combatants were not entitled to the protections of the Geneva Conventions. However, we would treat them within the spirit of the conventions. And quite frankly, we don't know any other way to treat detainees than the right way. The frustrating part, though, is over time, this administration has given detainees extra legal privileges to the point now where the four Guantanamo detainees who are going to be put on trial for war crimes have the same rights as you and I would enjoy, Rob, in a federal court of law. And it's unconscionable. The history of this country is if you're an unlawful combatant, meaning you do not wear a uniform, you're entitled to zero protections from the Geneva Conventions and law of war. And when we had eight German saboteurs caught dry foot in the United States during World War II, two of them flipped on the other six. And within 4 weeks, do you know, Rob, that military commissions were held, and these detainees were denied habeas corpus because they did not follow the law of war. They weren't wearing uniforms. They had obvious plans to blow up places of military production and to hurt people. And even though not one of those German saboteurs hurt one hair on one head, nor did they destroy any property, six of the eight were executed. And that all took place within 4 weeks. And that's legal, and it's proper. And we had a right to execute every single one of those Guantanamo detainees on the battlefield, but chose not to, obviously for selfish reasons, because some of them did have important information that saved many lives. But I think your listeners need to know, if they read Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, they will get the true inside story of what really goes on and how hard our folks work at doing the right thing. Everybody, every American can be proud of Guantanamo Bay, and my book explains why.
Here's my question. How has the media almost become borderline treasonous to you? To me, they do it when they don't report the true facts.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, again, the constitutional definition of treason is to give aid and comfort to the enemy. And when you tell lies about how we treat detainees, and when you don't tell the truth about how we treat detainees, that emboldens them. That gives them a reason to keep perpetrating their lies. And the folks that come out of there, and this is, to me, this is the real scandal. Nobody ever talks about the 600-plus detainees already released and the recidivism rate, the folks that go back to the battlefield, is over 28%. And that, to me, is inexcusable. I mean, how many of us during a war would release the enemy so he could come back and kill us? It doesn't make any sense. And there is no time limit. In fact, what the Geneva Conventions say is we can release them at the end of hostilities. And we did that during World War II. We held over 400,000 lawful combatant prisoners of war in this country without one call for extra legal privileges for them. And they were all released at the end of hostilities per the international law. We did that again at the end of the first Gulf War, where thousands of lawful combatant Iraqi prisoners of war were released within days after the end of hostilities. The problem with Guantanamo Bay and releasing these guys is that they're not entitled to be released. We don't have to release them until the bad guys stop trying to kill us. And these guys go back, like we saw with a gentleman named Ben Kumu, who led the attack in Benghazi. So there's a direct correlation between releasing these guys and them coming back to kill us. The left-leaning liberals or Islamist apologists claim that almost 500 terrorists have been tried and convicted in U.S. courts. Yet they also mention that just under 300 of them are currently in federal prisons. Well, where's the almost 200 rest of them? Are they on our streets? It's insane what's going on here. And, you know, I hope that we just wake up and make sure that our legislators know how we feel about maintaining Guantanamo Bay. Where else are you going to put unlawful combatant Islamist extremists who want to kill us?
And, you know, here's the thing. Does the government or the politicians understand the communication and the communication lines of, like, Al-Qaeda? Do they understand that there is a pipeline and there is a communication that they've never discovered yet?
It's hard for me to answer that. You know, the tip of the spear in this global war on terror are our clandestine operations, and some of our legislators have access to this information. But you don't see it in the press. And you know what? Sometimes we don't need to know what we don't need to know. But I think that you're right. I think there's some naivete out there, especially among the left and some of the liberals, who literally advocate for the release of these detainees, and that they're unaware of how deadly these people are. In fact, over in England today, the murderers of Lee Rigby, the British military person who was hacked to death by two Islamists, they were convicted today after about 90 minutes of deliberation. And that's the right thing. But here's what they do. You know, they behead us. They hack us to death. They blow us up. They drag our bodies naked and lifeless through the streets. And we've done none of that. Yet all you hear in the press is how we've tortured them, mistreat them, won't let them go, et cetera. And it just doesn't make any sense, Rob.
You know, here's a question that just come to me, Montgomery. How did some of them have a better life in Gitmo than they did in Iraq?
Well, some of them do. I mean, you know, we called them endearing names back in the early days in 2002. We called them carrots because they all came in very skinny, wearing orange jumpsuits. We called Camp X-Ray, which is where they were kept, the garden. But when we released some of them, or when we transferred them to where they are now, pretty much Camp Delta in April of 2002, some of them were called pumpkins. Some of them told us not to give them so much food, et cetera. Some of them don't want to go home. And some of that might be for legitimate reasons. They fear for their safety. But maybe they should have thought of that before they tried to kill us and left their country to go fight in Afghanistan. You know, they're kind of trying to backtrack now. Some of the arguments are, well, it's unlawful for us to return a detainee into an unsafe place. But you know what? It's very difficult in some cases to determine whether or not that detainee being repatriated is going to be safe. If the government gives us assurances that they're going to take them back and either put them through a rehabilitation program or keep their eyes on them for a while, if we have assurances and this person is determined to no longer pose a threat and are of no more intelligence value, yeah, they can be legitimately released. But now we're getting arguments that we, against their will, returned a couple detainees earlier this month. And it's almost funny because there's so much pressure on the U.S. to, quote-unquote, close Guantanamo Bay. Yet, when you try to repatriate some of these guys, then they come back and say, oh, you can't do that. Send them to a third country. But that's not what the law says, Rob. The law says at the end of hostilities, or if they're unlawful combatant, whenever we feel like it, we can repatriate them, but we can only give them back to the country of their origin. There's a detainee named Shaker Amr, who is a British resident, but time and again you'll read in the papers how this British citizen won't be returned to England where his family is. But here's a guy who's actually a Saudi citizen who was a resident of England, chose to go to Afghanistan with his family to train Al-Qaeda recruits and lead Al-Qaeda recruits in battle, and was captured. And now all of a sudden he's some British citizen who should be returned to the Brits. They don't really want him. They're saying they do, but as far as I'm concerned, he needs to go back to Saudi Arabia if he goes anywhere.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, it's such a subconscious war we're fighting. It's an ingrained imprint and pattern that they live. And I think that's where we really mess up, is because the leadership in the White House don't understand the people they're going to war against. Do you feel that, Montgomery?
Yeah, I think there's a big naivete in this administration There's a lack of understanding and appreciation of what the Geneva Conventions and the law of land warfare are all about. Those laws were written, and the first ones over 100 years ago, to protect innocent civilians during time of war. They were not written to protect those who pretend to be civilians in order to murder them. And if you understand that fine point, that fine legal point, there's no way you would give any legal or extra legal privileges to unlawful combatants. They just didn't follow the rules of war. And they, like I said before, they could have been executed on the battlefield. In fact, the humanity of Gitmo is that it exists at all. All these detainees are lucky to be alive, and that should be the attitude of this administration, that these are our enemies. However harmful or harmless they may be, they're still our enemies. And in any war I've ever read about, you detain your enemy until the conflict is over. And this administration just has it backwards. And I don't know if they're trying to make brownie points with international interests, but their sworn interest should be to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies and protect the people of this great nation.
You just said something. Has our government forgot it's for the people, by the people, and the people and the powers to be? To me, they have totally forgot it.
They have. And I think they need to go back and read up a little bit. And I think they also need to read up on the Second Amendment, which very clearly states a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. And I'm telling you, there are a lot of pissed-off veterans out there. There are disabled veterans. There are reservists. There are retirees who are fed up, and some of us, I don't own a weapon, Rob, but I carried one and used one in a combat zone, and I've been thinking, maybe I need to go out and get me something, because I'll tell you what, the way our government is treating us is kind of showing that they might be a domestic threat. They're taking away their promises. They're treating us like second-class citizens. I mean, to take money, and which equals food, out of the mouths of a disabled veteran, is there anything more treasonous than that? I don't think so.
No, and also the borders are wide open, and there's two things they're doing that is very, and to me another one is the illegal immigration bill. Them two are the most probably disingenuous things. But when I heard them, they was going to cut the veterans. The veterans breathed air in Iraq that you'll never know for years what's going to happen. And
that's
the part I mean, you don't know what the people got into over there or in a war zone or anything. And that's the thing. People sat in Washington, D.C. that never been to war, thinking they know war. That's about like me saying I know war and I've never been there. Mm-hmm. I've seen it on TV, but that's nothing like being there.
Well, you're right. It's not a pleasant experience. And those that volunteer to do it for the rest of us should be honored. And the very least thing we can do to honor their service, to honor their commitment, and, you know, people don't talk about this a lot, but the commitment of their loved ones, the commitment of their families, it's very difficult for folks to have their loved ones in a war zone. I can't imagine what my wife went through. She's my personal hero, and I dedicate my book to her. But she stayed home with three young boys while I was in Iraq, away from home for 14 months, and that is a huge commitment. That is a total and complete commitment. And the soldiers that go overseas and defend our freedom and liberty write a blank check to the president. They write a blank check to every legislator. They write a blank check to every single citizen in this country. And the very least we can do is keep our promises to give them what they earned. And for a veteran, an active duty retiree who spends 20 good years in the service, they're entitled to half their pay for the rest of their life. But that's not a living wage. And what the Congress has just done is taken away the cost of living increase in that pay for the next 10 years. They've taken that away from disabled retirees and from whole retirees. They've taken it away from surviving families. They have desecrated the one thing that a returning veteran can count on, and now they can't count on that anymore.
But here's one that really, here's what makes me mad. They cut, the veterans, they cut the stuff, but they give themselves a pay raise. That's the one that bothers me.
That's the one that makes me feel like we have enemies in Washington, D.C.
We do.
You know, you've heard Patton say, lead, follower, get the hell out of the way. Well, it's time to say that to our legislators. They need to lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way, because something's got to change.
Well, they got to get the hell out of the way because they don't know nothing but a campaign contribution, and that's the way I feel.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Now, Mr. Patton, you just brought up General Patton. How was he so right at the end of World War II that it's unbelievable?
Because he's a soldier. You know, we are trained, and you'll find this in Sun Tzu's The Art of War, you know, to win. We're trained to win a battle. And we go on a mission, and we keep fighting until the mission is complete. What's frustrating and difficult is that almost every single conflict that we've been a part of has been controlled by politicians in the end. And I understand that that's probably a necessary evil. But his ideas were correct. We should have gone to Moscow. It would have just changed the world forever. You know, if we listened to MacArthur, there probably would be no North Korea right now. In Vietnam, we never fully committed ourselves. In fact, after the Tet Offensive, the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong were completely vulnerable and spent. Yet we listened as a nation to Walter Cronkite say the war wasn't winnable, which was the exact opposite of the truth. After we gained back all the areas that the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong spent every last bullet taking from us, after we got that back, we should have continued the counterattack. We'd have mopped up in probably less than a year what then became a losing proposition, because what Walter Cronkite did was take away the will of the people to support the mission. And that's what a soldier does. A soldier completes the mission.
You know, it almost, this is, they give up. They think they can go in and do it with so small to look so good rather than going in looking so large to make everybody scared and just get it ended. Is that kind of true?
I think it depends on the conflict. I think the war that we're fighting right now, the global war on terror, and if you don't like that, you can call it, a struggle against Islamists. It took us a couple wars several hundred years ago to defeat the Islamists of those times in the Barbary Wars. It took two attempts. So after the second attempt, we made it very clear we were not going to put up with bully tactics or kidnappings or threatening our trade on the high seas. And now things are so much more complex, like I mentioned to you before, that we pulled out of Iraq, gave the high ground in the global war on terror back to the enemy. That was a place that we could have staged untold numbers of operations to really take away the means and the will of our enemy to keep trying to kill us. And that's how you defeat your enemy. You take away the means and will for him to be able to kill you, or you kill them all. And since we're in 150 countries plus right now, we are in all-out war against Islamists, against people who want to kill us and take away our way of life. And it's not just us. You know, these folks perpetrate terrorist acts all over the world on a daily basis. And to defeat them, we need to be where they are. We need to take the fight to them, and we need to do it in a clandestine way. So the conventional warfare scenario works against folks like Saddam Hussein and the Taliban when we first went into Afghanistan. Those tactics worked, but only for so long. Then eventually you have to infiltrate the systems that support our enemy. And what we're doing right now is we can't really get out of our own way because of all the things that we've given back. And you know what? If we've made friends in the Middle East, they're scratching their heads about our behavior because our behavior doesn't say that you can count on us. Our behavior doesn't tell them that we can be a trusted long-term friend. Like we have been to Germany, Japan, and Italy, our enemies, 68 years ago, and we are still in those countries, Rob. We still have troops and airplanes and ships and bases in those countries and others that were defeated in World War II. And why do we have them there? Because those are our power projection platforms. Those are the places that we can attack the enemy from and a safe place for us to go and resupply and to stage these operations. We need to be back in Iraq. We need to stay in Afghanistan. Everywhere we go, when we create a new government and help them develop their own freedom and liberty with their own culture, we need to remain not just as friends, but as committed friends, people who are going to stick with them and help them and defend them like we've done so many other places. Why it's going the other way is unfortunately a testament to the philosophy of our current administration, that they are sympathetic to the enemy, and it's literally killing us.
Yeah, sympathetic is one thing. I call it another thing. But I got a question for you, Montgomery. How was Petraeus actually the leader in getting Iraq settled down and get it going forward then we pulled out on him?
Petraeus, he
was over there and he was talking to the warlords, to the real people, and he understood what to do more than the politicians. So here's the real question. Let me rephrase.
Mm-hmm.
If the politicians would have stayed away and let him handle it, where would we be today?
Well, I think you'd have a pacified Iraq, and you'd have a situation where the countries around Iraq would be stable. Syria would be stable. Iran would be probably still shaking in their boots because, you know, you could put the squeeze on them if you're in Iraq and Afghanistan. But, you know, as soon as we pulled out of Iraq, the Iranians were right in there. And what we've done is we've emboldened our old arch nemesis, Russia. They're basically playing with us. They have absolutely no fear whatsoever from this administration. Yet, and their goal in life is to make us look like fools and to further their own cause. And they've done a pretty good job of it. But Petraeus, you know, a veritable military genius, had it right. That you have to go down on the ground, get to know folks. Think of it if we had a problem and one of our friends came in to help us. Would it be better for them to be in our neighborhoods and our communities working with us hand in hand to defeat our enemy? Or would it be better for them to just stay on their bases and let us go it alone? So Petraeus had the right idea. But again, the politics get in the way because there's all this pressure to get out, send the troops home. But the troops, even though, yeah, we always want to go home, back to our families, our mission comes first. And the mission was not complete in Iraq when we pulled out.
And, you know, how come the people, the newscast didn't show more of the troops playing soccer with the Iraqis?
That was my complaint. You know, before I went over, you were looking on the news, at least I was, and my buddies were looking for the man in the street interview. Yeah, what does the average Iraqi think of Americans? What, you know, what's going on over here? And I tell you, the best times I had in Iraq, and I think most soldiers will tell you this, is when we got to go out to the villages and share some of the things that were sent to us from overseas back home. They would send us, we tell them, send school supplies, soccer balls, shoes, clothing items, and maybe a couple times a month on a Friday, which is their holy day, they most of us stay home, we would go out, and it was like Christmas. And that it really is the heart and soul of the American. We are the most generous, benevolent people on planet Earth. We are very prosperous, but we're also extremely generous. And seeing the faces of the men, women, and children of Iraq light up when we would come and share these just not very expensive items, but things that made their lives a little bit better. And I had a chance to work at Abu Ghraib prison when I was there after the scandal trying to clean that mess up. I worked with the human rights folks, the Iraqi Minister of Human Rights. And, you know, these were very sincere people, Rob. They were extremely grateful. In fact, these two gentlemen took me aside one day after I helped them resolve an issue with one of the detainees. And they looked me in the eye. They were on their way out. And they said, thank you very much. And I said, no problem. And they said, no, thank you very much for what you're doing here for us. We know that you have left your family. You don't have to be here. You choose to be here, and we are grateful. And you know what? That meant the world to me. And most Iraqis over there were the same way. You know, these are very intelligent, cultured people. And they have a very long history. And they would tell us over and over again, you know, it's not the Iraqis who are blowing you up on the roadsides. It's not the Iraqis who are fighting you. It's the foreigners. They would call Al-Qaeda the foreigners. So, you know, most of the Americans don't understand that for the very reason you brought up. You don't see it. You don't see the interviews from these people. You don't hear it on the news, how grateful they were that we came. Now, like anybody, if you had someone who you were convinced invaded you, you'd want them to leave. But that's not what we were doing there. We didn't fly the American flag on our bases. We weren't allowed to because we were not a conquering army. The military does not want to conquer. We want to win the battle and then move on. We don't want to control and profit from Iraq. We want them to be able to control and profit from their own country, from their own industriousness. And you know what? There are a lot of very honest, hardworking Iraqis who are very grateful that we were there. But you just didn't see it.
We weren't supposed to see it, were we, Montgomery?
No, that wasn't the left's idea of news. The left's idea of news was how many Americans can we find who are doing the wrong thing. If there's a scandal or somebody made a mistake or did something wrong, that's front page news. But all the warm, fuzzy, good feeling stories about all the things we did with their infrastructure, the schools, all those things that helped them help themselves, you very rarely saw anything about that.
And also, I got one question, then I'll end the show. How does the American political system and the powers to be underestimate the intelligence level of them people over there?
Well, I think it goes to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. You know, perception is reality. And you probably heard the phrase low information voter. Many people yeah. these days are satisfied with whatever they're fed by the news media and don't really dig any deeper, or they don't know anyone who's been there. You know, less than 1% of us are in the military these days, And so the likelihood of the vast majority of citizens knowing someone who's had a personal experience in combat or with the Iraqi people or the Afghan people is slim and none. And if these stories aren't told, like you are doing with having me on your show, if people don't listen to it and aren't exposed to it, they're going to go on believing whatever it is they do see and hear on the regular news media. So we have a duty to never be satisfied, to always seek out more. And I like to call my book a small piece to a big puzzle about the enigma of Gitmo. My story is just one story. And I don't expect people to just look at my book and say, wow, that's what it was like. That's what it was like in the beginning. But there are many other stories, there are many other points of view, and I think an intelligent person will get as many of those points of view as possible, put them together, and come up with a reality that's based on truth rather than what the media wants us to believe.
And Montgomery, and the book is Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, A Memoir of a Citizen Warrior by Montgomery J. Granger, and you can go to sbpra.com/Montgomery J. Granger. You can go to amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, book order at AEG-online store, and you can buy the book and open your eyes to really what's going on in the world. And Montgomery, give the people some wisdom, and I'm going to close out the show.
Well, once again, everyone out there, you can be proud of Guantanamo Bay, and everybody there really works extremely hard, so you will be proud of them. And just remember, when you're sitting at home, you're enjoying your families, as you should, that there are folks out there who are away from their families who wrote us a blank check for their lives, their livelihood, their safety, and to do what we can to support them, especially when they come home, and to give aid and comfort to their families while they're away. Thank you so much, Rob. God bless you. You're a great American.
Well, thank you, and Merry Christmas to you and your family, and we will do this again next year three times.
Awesome. I can't wait, and thank you again. You're very generous and kind. I appreciate it.
Well, the American people have to wake up and get off of the media dope and into the real world to expand this country back into wealth.
Absolutely.
All right. Good night and Merry Christmas to all.
Thank you, too.